The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericahealth.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
For decades, the power of women's hormone shifts has been unrecognized and underestimated. Most women have a lack of education when it comes to the endocrine system and how and why our hormones affect our minds, moods, and behaviors. Welcome to Holy Hormones, Honey, with your host, Leslie Carol Botha, sponsored by True Hope, the leaders in brain health. When women thrive, everyone thrives. That is True Hope. Now, here is your host, Leslie Botha.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Holy Hormones, Honey, the greatest story never told. I'm Leslie Carol Botha, your host. I'm a women's health educator, broadcast journalist, and internationally recognized expert on women's hormones and behaviors. I am the co-author of Understanding Your Mind, Mood, and Hormone Cycle, written for women who want to understand the sometimes confusing physical and psychological changes they experience each month. The book is available on Amazon, or you can get it through my blog at holyhormones.com. In fact, I invite you to find me on Facebook under Leslie Botha and on my Facebook page, Holy Hormones Honey, or LinkedIn under Leslie Botha and Twitter at Hormone Goddess. That's all for you social media freaks out there. We spend a lot of our time on social media these days. The sponsor of this show is True Hope Nutritional Support, truehope.com. And True Hope is offering 25% off your first order of Empower Plus for listeners of the show. Go to the host page for Holy Hormones Honey on the Voice America host page. Click on the True Hope ad, and that will take you to the testimonial page where you can watch video testimonies of how Empower Plus, a micronutrient supplement, has changed hundreds of people's lives. Or you can call 888-878-3467 and use the code word radio to get your special offer. I would like to welcome back my guest, Julia Ruckledge, PhD. Since the last time Professor Ruckledge was on the show, her study, which was published in the British Medical Journal, and I might have that wrong, I think it's Psychiatry, will forever change. That's right, British Medical of Psychiatry will forever change how medical treatment is perceived. We, the people, the medical consumers, now need to change our own paradigms of perception and open our eyes to healing versus medicating. And the topic of the show is: study reports significant robust improvement in ADHD and depression with micronutrient protocol. Most of you do know what ADHD is. It's a hyperactivity disorder, a neurodevelopmental condition, and it's the most commonly diagnosed psychiatric disorder in childhood, often persisting into adulthood. As many as 1 in 20 adults have ADHD, marked by symptoms such as inattention and then lack of concentration, impulsiveness, and difficulty controlling behavior. Many other symptoms are associated, including hyperactivity, bipolar and panic disorders, anxiety, depression, and social anxiety. Julia Ruckledge, that's about most of us these days, right? Nice to have you on the show.
Great. Thanks for asking me to come in and talk about the study.
And Julia, for those of you who are not aware, is the professor of clinical psychology in the Department of Psychology at the University of Canterbury, Christchurch, New Zealand, where it's early, early in the morning there. She has been doing a lot of her training and focus on ADHD, and now is really just kind of shaking things up by looking at ADHD in a whole different view. Right, Julia?
Absolutely. This study is unique in that it's the first randomized controlled trial that used a broad-based spectrum approach to treating ADHD. So it's the but the idea of looking at nutrition with ADHD isn't a new idea.
No, that goes back some way.
Absolutely. It goes back to the 70s when there was a lot of studies looking at manipulation of diet and taking things out of diets in order to see whether or not it made a difference for ADHD. And they, sadly, a lot of those studies did not show great changes, and so it was dismissed for a long time that nutrition could actually have an effect on ADHD behaviors. And it's kind of been revived over the last decade in that there's been some studies that have been done showing that actually if we do take out, say, food coloring and or other you know, other types of things in the diet that may cause problems with children, that you can make a difference in a, not all children, but certainly in a small minority of children. And so that is becoming a little bit more well known, that you can manipulate the diet. But this approach is actually adding things into the diet and saying that maybe these kids don't have what they need out of their food, and so let's give them more nutrients. And that's the sort of the difference between this study and those other studies that have manipulated diet.
Well, I have talked about this many times on the show, and the problem is so serious now because we're not getting nutrients in the foods that we are eating.
There's definitely that is a likely playing a role. That the nutrient content of our food is not as rich as it has been, and that the introduction of processed foods has made a huge difference in terms of the types of foods children are getting exposed to and making having a huge effect on their food choices as well.
Yeah, and I won't have to go down that road again, but those of you who follow this show, and I welcome all of you and all our new listeners today, is that we've got kids growing up on foods that are highly processed. They have genetically modified organisms in them, GMOs. They're microwaving food. They're eating fast foods. And they're hardly eating anything that's fresh and vital and alive. And here's my point, Julie, and I know you'll agree with this. We are alive beings. We need to be eating alive food. If you want to be a dead being, then you eat a processed food. And something that's dead, it's really, folks, as simple as that. But there's the big problem here. And then I do want to focus on the study, Julie, and we have a lot to cover. Yep. I have an article on my blog this morning. It's a feature news piece, Prison or Treatment for People with Mental Illness. And this was in Psychology Today earlier in February, written by Rachel Pruchno, who reported on a mother's story about her daughter. And Rachel says, America's jails have become our psychiatric facilities. I remember when mental institutions were closed down and people with mood disorders were left to fend for themselves on the street. And now we're putting them back in jail. And this is a sad story of one young woman. I gaze at my daughter's mugshot. The hazel eyes that used to light up a room stare blankly back at me. Her hair is cut ragged, most likely the result of a manic episode and access to a pair of scissors. Her orange jumpsuit partially covers the butterfly tattoo imprinted on her chest. The charge, failure to appear, possession of marijuana. She has an arrest number. This is not just a dumb kid who got caught with a little marijuana. This is a person with serious mental illness who has refused treatment for 3 years. She self-medicates with marijuana, methamphetamine, and alcohol. In fifth grade, my daughter was diagnosed with ADHD. As a high school junior, she was diagnosed with bipolar disorder. At 17, doctors added borderline personality disorder to her list of diagnosed conditions. Treated, my daughter was granted admission to one of our country's finest liberal arts colleges. In jail, she'll meet many people like her, but she's not likely to get the help she needs for her mental illness. What a powerful, sad story, don't you think, Julia?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we see that repeated around the world, is that if you go into any forensic facility, that if you were to assess and find out how many of them had a mental illness, the rates are very high. We've seen that here in New Zealand, that the rates of ADHD, when we've looked at that, that it's been upwards of 60 to 70% of them. So it's definitely a concern that's sort of how it's ended up, that we've taken out the mental institutions, we've given them medications, and then now they're ending up in the facilities, into the forensic facilities.
And what a vicious cycle that is. So, Julia, let me ask you this. Is ADHD then a progressive disorder?
I'm not sure what you mean by progressive.
Well, I mean, she was diagnosed, this young woman was diagnosed in the fifth grade with ADHD, then diagnosed with bipolar at 17, and then added borderline personality disorder. I'm just following that thought there. I mean,
absolutely, if you look at the sample that we studied, we've actually just had a study accepted for publication, which is looking at what we call the comorbidities of ADHD in adulthood, and they are incredibly high, and that they have other co-occurring diagnoses like major depression or bipolar or anxiety disorders or alcohol and substance abuse, etc. So that seems to go along with the picture. The comorbidity is the rule rather than the exception. So our sample had over 50% of them having some other diagnosis as well. So yes, that to answer your question, that when you look at children, if you were to look at children at about seven or eight, they may have ADHD, and you may have a learning disability. If you assess them a couple of years later, you probably have a bit of oppositional defiant disorder on top of that. And then as you assess them as they get older and older, then there are other things that pile on. There's some people who wonder whether or not medications has influenced that or not. That's a very hard thing to tease out, because medications have been in use for such a long time. So some people will argue it's the progression of the illness, and other people might argue that the types of treatments that we're using are having an influence. And at this point in time, it would be very difficult to figure out which is which. But if you go back to prior to the use of medications, then you find that you don't have the co-occurring bipolar disorder occurring to the extent that it is these days, along with ADHD.
Oh, that is disturbing. And once again, this mother writes in this article, "Treated, my daughter was granted admission to one of our country's finest liberal arts colleges." Let's assume that treated was on medication. And then she says, but she refused to stay on her treatment. Is that part of that oppositional disorder that you mentioned? Or is it possible that the girl can't function on the medications?
It could be. A lot of people don't like the medications. They don't like how they feel on it, and they don't like the accompanying side effects. But having said that, even when if the medication has made them well, our experience is that people can often stop a treatment that is making a difference for them. So that's an interesting human phenomenon that we're observing, sadly, that even when we've made people really well, they don't always stay on the treatment. Now, whether or not that's because of a whole bunch of other factors like cost associated with alternative treatments or having to take a pill regularly, those can contribute to people becoming what we call non-compliant with the treatment. So it's hard to know what factor is playing the role in all of that. But certainly for some people, they'll stop the treatment because they simply don't like it, or they don't find that it's having an effect the way they want to. They find that it doesn't the effect cannot be as strong as it was when they first went on it.
You know, well, I wonder how much self-esteem comes into that, and people really wanting to get well, or just feel that they've got to accept the state that they're in. They're not good enough. There are so many issues that could be spun around that, but let's not go there. Why don't you lay the foundation when we come back after the break, then we can dive right into the study. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and your work up to this point?
Absolutely. So over the last 6 years, my lab in New Zealand, which we've now labeled the Mental Health and Nutrition Research Group, we've been looking at the impact of micronutrients on mental illness. And so we started out initially with very, very small studies, which is what you would do if you're starting to delve into a completely different area, because this is not my area of training. I was trained as a clinical psychologist, not as a dietitian or nutritionist or pharmacologist or anything like that. So I approached this treatment very cautiously, naturally, because it was something that I was very unfamiliar with. So we started out with case studies, and then you move on to open label trials, which is where you give people micronutrients and then observe how they change over time just to see whether or not this treatment actually does have an effect. That's the first thing you do. And if you, in an open label trial, you find that indeed it is, you do have a positive effect on your participants, then you move into what's called a randomized controlled trial. And so we got the approval to run this randomized controlled trial back in 2009, and we, or 2008, and then we started recruiting in 2009, and then we finished the study just a year and a half ago, and then have just recently published it. So it's a very long process to get from the start of a randomized controlled trial to the end of a randomized controlled trial. And so what a randomized controlled trial is doing is that it's allowing you to compare the micronutrients to an inert substance that we call a placebo, and to see whether or not the effects that you've been observing are what we like to call true effects, in that they can be attributed to the micronutrients and not just the overall good feeling that one gets when they go through when they're being cared for in a research capacity, which is a very common phenomenon. So we're trying to, what we call, control for that effect, and see whether or not once you've controlled for that effect, is there an effect above and beyond that placebo effect? And that's what we've just, the work has published, is showing that the micronutrients have an effect above the placebo effect, which is fantastic news in terms of this proving that this is a viable way forward. And that just, now what we need to do is do it again and replicate it. Sadly, we need to, not sadly, but sadly in the terms that it takes a long time, because if you have one trial, you always need another trial in order to confirm that the observations made in the first trial were actually real observations. So it's a very long process to go from an idea or a treatment that seems to be working for lots of people to actually trying to confirm that this is a good way forward that can then move into the mainstream and become a treatment that people actually take seriously.
Wow, there's a lot to think about there. No, let's stop right there. We're going to go into a break. You're listening to Holy Hormones, Honey, The Greatest Story Never Told. Julia Rutledge is my guest. She's helping us understand this new paradigm that we're embarking on using micronutrient protocol for mood disorders and ADHD. I'll be right back. Stay with us.
A fresh look at today's health. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Are you taking medications for depression, anxiety, or hyperactivity? Are you one of the millions of people who have experienced negative side effects from your medication? Do you notice that you just don't feel like yourself? For decades, the nutrient therapy leaders at True Hope have helped tens of thousands of children and adults replace their medications with Empower Plus, an all-natural multivitamin and mineral complex clinically proven to fix the issues rather than cover them up. If you or someone you know is ready for a natural solution that works, go to www.truehope.com to learn more. 20 medical journal publications show that the Empower Plus formulation can replace harsh medications. Thousands of people taking all-natural Empower Plus are medication-free without a return of symptoms. Go to www.truehope.com or call 888-878-3467 to try a bottle of Empower Plus today. Type in offer code RADIO for 25% off your first order. Again, that's www.truehope.com or 888-878-3467.
Understanding your mind, mood, and hormone cycle is dedicated to all the women who have ever experienced a hormone fluctuation, to the generations of women who have died because they had forgotten the source of their being. The richly illustrated, groundbreaking book, co-authored by Leslie Carroll Botha and H. Sandra Chevalier-Batik, is the product of a 9-year project which represents the author's shared passion and unified purpose to provide women with the education they need to reclaim their bodies and their souls. Find the book today. Click the link on the radio show page.
Step into a healthier you. Voice America Health and Wellness.
You are tuned in to Holy Hormones, Honey, with Leslie Carol Botha. To call into our program today, please dial 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. You may also send an email to leslie@holyhormones.com. Now, back to the show.
And welcome back to Holy Hormones, Honey, the greatest story never told. We're speaking with Julia Ruckledge, PhD. She is a professor. She has just completed a very significant study showing robust improvement in ADHD and depression symptoms. Treatment was much more effective than placebo. As we heard in the last segment, this is a lengthy process. They initiated the study back in 2009, and it was just published January 31st, 2014. So that's just about 5 years or within a four-year span. This study made BBC News. It made television news down in Australia. There's a fabulous interview with Julia talking about the study. The study also made a lot of the digital media news, business news around the country and all of the major cities in the country. Julia is back to talk more about the study. But before I do that, Julia, just overall, how are the reactions to the news about your work? Are you getting a lot of response to this?
Oh, absolutely. I get a lot of emails from a mixed crowd. I'm getting emails from physicians, which is really wonderful, asking for a reprint of the study because you can't always get it online. So I get a lot of requests for reprints, and that's always a good gauge of how much interest you're getting in it. And I've had a lot of wonderfully supportive ones from people around the world, just saying how impressed they are with the work and that this is wonderful that this type of research is actually being done. A lot of emails from the contact from the public and people wanting to be, we've got a new study going now where we're going to try to see if this effect can be observed in children. And so we've just launched a randomized controlled trial with children with ADHD. And so I've been getting expressions of interest from all over the world to be in that study. And sadly, we can only accept people who are in New Zealand for that research, and so we're having to turn a lot of people away for that, unfortunately, because we'd love to be able to include anyone from all over the world, but because of the intensity of it being in a study and that we need to be able to see them face-to-face and we take blood work to monitor their safety during the research trial, and we're also interested in this time around in seeing whether or not we can observe brain changes by putting them into an MRI machine. So we're going to track before and after the treatment to see whether or not that can have, we can observe changes in the brain based on taking micronutrients. So there's a whole bunch of things that we're doing, but it means that people have to be in the New Zealand area, preferably in the Christchurch area, in order to participate. So we've had certainly wonderful local media people within New Zealand. People who had been in the trial have been publicly speaking about the research, which has also been wonderful that the participants have been so positive and agreeable to speak to the media. And so we've had several featured stories on them here in New Zealand as well. So just talking about the wonderful benefits. And some of these people were in our trial from the, you know, back in, it started the trial in 2009, so they've been taking the micronutrients for 5 years. And our observation is that when people stay on these micronutrients, they continue to do really well. We are not seeing a wearing off of the effect, which is a wonderful thing to observe. And so we're excited about that because some of the long-term studies on other treatments like the medications are not so, are more disappointing in that kids who stay on medications in the long term don't have a long-term effect on their ADHD behaviors. It doesn't seem to be translating into good academic performance like we would have hoped, given the very, very short-term effects that you see.
And of course, the micronutrient supplement that we're referring to is the True Hope Empower Plus. The website is truehope.com. Yes, they are the sponsor of the show. But even more importantly, there are 24 independent published studies now in journals, peer-reviewed journals, on the use, like Professor Ruckledge's recent study, for ADHD, depression, anxiety, bipolar disorder. This is the only supplement of its kind that can boast these types of studies that are being read around the world. Mm-hmm. In fact, I happen to know that. True Hope's got doctors calling them left and right, because there are so many other physicians now who are looking for new ways to treat their patients, because I think the veil is falling for a lot on understanding that medications just are not having the desired effects, the desired outcomes that we had hoped.
Exactly. I think there has been, it's slow to come. So there is certainly still a level of opposition to this idea. And so it's not that everyone isn't going to suddenly embrace this as a new way forward and throw away the medications. That's going to take a long time before that, if that happens at all. But certainly there's definitely a shift. And so, for example, in a couple of weeks, I'm flying to Wellington and I'm going to be giving a talk to a group of physicians who are interested in integrative medicine. And so that's organized around Australasia. And so to get those types of invitations is really exciting, because that suggests that GPs and physicians are starting to want to know more about this, and whereas they probably pretty much weren't aware of other options outside of the pharmaceutical industry, say 20 years ago or so. So it's nice to see those types of shifts happening, that they're starting to become interested in. So if we can grow that research base, then they're far more likely to pay attention to it. So it's really, really important that the research happens, and that a study like what I've done gets replicated and over again, that we can see these, so that people have more and more confidence in using this. Sometimes it might, at some point in time, it might be that it's viewed as a first line approach as opposed to second or third line approach to treating mental illness. So we'd like to get to a point where people think about nutrition when there's somebody who's ill, and think, is this something that we could address first before we embark on other treatments, which sadly sometimes carries a side effect profile that can be problematic for some patients.
Yeah, before we go into depth on the study, and I do want to go back to that point about side effects, so remind me of that, Julia. But you published one study, it seems to be, and we referenced it the last time you were on this radio show, about the cost savings from treating someone with medications versus a micronutrient protocol or a nutritional approach.
Right. No, that wasn't me. That was Dr. Rodway and Bonnie Kaplan at the University of Calgary who published that case study. I mean, what's remarkable, I can speak to it.
Thank you.
A wonderful case study of a young person with who presented with psychotic symptoms and OCD and other types of behaviors, and was treated with conventional treatments and was hospitalized for a long period of time. And by the end of all of that, he had shown no improvement in his symptoms. And then he tried the micronutrients, and then all those symptoms were changed and rectified with the use of the micronutrients. And so they compared the cost of being in the inpatient unit with the cost of taking the micronutrients. As you can well imagine, it's night and day. I don't remember the exact figures, but I think it was about $120,000 for the 6 months before taking the supplements, and then about $3,000 after. So it could be a cost saving measure if they'd done it in reversal and tried the micronutrients first. Who knows how it would have come out? But we certainly would have, given his response to the micronutrients, you'd hope that he would have gotten better and then not have to have suffered through all of that ineffective treatment, or all those treatments that didn't work for him anyway.
Yeah. And it's no wonder, again, going back to what you said earlier, that people stop their medications. They just feel lousy on them. They're not effective. They're not doing what they need to do. They're having all of those side effects. Let me ask you this, Julia. Did you ever think you'd be going and speaking about micronutrients to a group of integrative physicians? Did you ever see this day coming?
We have done that before in the States. So I've been involved in some of the workshops that True Hope has put together. And so they certainly seem to attract a lot of people within North America. The fact that I'm doing that in New Zealand is really wonderful because these are my peers and these are people who have been rather dismissive of my work for a long time. So it's nice to see that they're starting to pay attention and changing their perspectives. So it's wonderful that those types of changes are happening. And there are other changes afoot in that there are new societies that are being created around nutritional psychiatry. That's one that's happening in a month in Melbourne. And that is going to attract people from all over the world to go to that and listen to what the developments in nutrition and mental health. So there's definitely changes afoot, and it's people are far more open than they were when I first started. There's still a long way to go. There's still people who have an understanding of mental illness that is very, very challenging to shift. So there's a lot of work to be done, and you sometimes feel like you have to do it one by one. But hopefully there'll be some momentum, and we can have a larger effect over time.
Well, along with mental illness comes depression, and if you're depressed, it's very hard to move forward to make change. Even if you want to make change, it's like getting caught up in the hellhole of your brain, and people are so traumatized by that they don't know where to turn. And how to turn, even if they want to turn.
Sort of on that topic is that another very, very important group of people who are going to make a difference are the consumers, and they are, because of the internet, they have a lot more access to information than they did 10 years ago, and so they're able to search and find out that there are these other options that are available, and so they bring that into their physicians and say, have you heard about this? You know, have you ever heard of using micronutrients? So I often get approached by people because their patients have come in and said, I'd like to try this approach, and how do I get started on it? And physicians, of course, there's many out there who haven't heard of micronutrients, and so they may contact me and try to learn about it that way. Some will, of course, be dismissive of it, sadly, and just encourage the patient to not try those because they'll say that there isn't any evidence out there, to which I guess I just encourage them to read the literature, because there is certainly a growing body of evidence, not just from our lab, and it's not just about MPower Plus, it's about lots of different micronutrient formulas that have been researched, certainly not to the extent, though, as MPower Plus.
And I invite all the listeners who want this type of information, a great place to start is the truehope.com website, and they have a list of all the research that has been published on the micronutrient protocol. So, Julie, tell us about your study now. How many people were in it? How long was it? And just give us some background on that so we can start talking about it more.
Right. So we recruited 80 people who have ADHD, and so just in that in itself is a challenge.
How many people?
Pardon me?
How many people did you say a number?
80.
Okay,
so
very good.
About half and half in each group. That's a fairly. Some people will criticize the study and say that that's a fairly small number of people to put into a randomized controlled trial. But when people comment on that, what they don't understand is that in order to make a decision of how many people you need in a trial, you do a pilot trial, and the pilot trial tells you how large your effect is. And the larger your effect is, the less people you need in a trial. So if you have a fairly modest effect, then you need to have hundreds of people in a trial. But if your effect is large, then you need a lot less. So we did it's called a power analysis, and that gives you an idea of how many people you need to recruit in order for your effect to be detectable above and beyond the placebo effect. So that's how we came up with that number. So just so that it's not viewed as being too small a study, and so therefore we'll dismiss it. It's actually powered the way it should have been powered, and we recruited an adequate sample in order to detect the effect. So I hope that made sense.
That's brilliant, Julia. I have never heard that before, and I for one have sometimes criticized a clinical trial for being such a small study. I did not know that, and I'm sure our listeners are just as surprised as well. That's valuable information. I appreciate it.
Well, it's very valuable. I mean, a lot of people think they will judge a trial based on how large it is. And in fact, when you end up with those trials that are thousands of people and then they detect an effect, that means that they are often detecting with a very small effect. And so you need those large samples in order to detect what's a very small effect. When it comes to, when it comes to what we call clinical significance, you're far more interested in a very large effect than a small effect, because a small effect is going to make, very small difference it means also that less people are benefiting from the treatment. So a large effect means that more people are also benefiting from the treatment. So that's an important thing for people to really understand, that we can't compare this and say, well, it's just so much smaller than a drug trial. It doesn't need to be that big in order for us to detect the effect. So that's really an important thing for the audience to understand that. And if you imagine, Bonnie Kaplan described that if you had a feed that made a difference to corn and it doubled the size of the corn, you only need to do that on a row of corn in order for you to observe it. But if the effect is just a tiny, a couple of centimeters, then you'd need the whole field to have used that feed in order for you to see that effect, that small growth and changes based on your fertilizer.
And that is a great analogy. We've only got about a minute left before we go into break. Her analogy is great, but also I really appreciate your taking the time so to explain that to us. So just briefly, in that pilot study, you had this power ratio that you were able to... A power ratio, an equation then that you were able to use to gauge the impact of the small amount of people in your clinical trial.
Exactly. So in the pilot trial, our effects were so large that in the 15 people that we had in our pilot trial, the effect was so large that this was the number that you needed in order to be able to detect the effect compared to a placebo, because there's always the placebo takes up a lot of the changes that can have happen. So you need to have a larger sample than 15 in a randomized controlled trial. So
thank you. Let's just table that there. Let us absorb that. We're going to go to break. This is Holy Hormones, Honey, the greatest story never told, and we'll be right back. Stay with us.
Opinions, options, answers. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Understanding your mind, mood, and hormone cycle is dedicated to all the women who have ever experienced a hormone fluctuation, to the generations of women who have died because they had forgotten the source of their being. The richly illustrated groundbreaking book, co-authored by Leslie Carroll Botha and H. Sandra Chevalier Batik, is the product of a 9-year project which represents the author's shared passion and unified purpose to provide women with the education they need to reclaim their bodies and their souls. Find the book today. Click the link on the radio show page.
Are you taking medications for depression, anxiety, or hyperactivity? Are you one of the millions of people who have experienced negative side effects from your medication? Do you notice that you just don't feel like yourself? For decades, the nutrient therapy leaders at True Hope have helped tens of thousands of children and adults replace their medications with Empower Plus, an all-natural multivitamin and mineral complex clinically proven to fix the issues rather than cover them up. If you or someone you know is ready for a natural solution that works, go to www.truehope.com to learn more. 20 medical journal publications show that the Empower Plus formulation can replace harsh medications. Thousands of people taking all-natural Empower Plus are medication-free without a return of symptoms. Go to www.truehope.com or call 888-878-3467 to try a bottle of Empower Plus today. Type in offer code RADIO for 25% off your first order. Again, that's www.truehope.com or 888-878-3467.
A healthy dialogue for your lifestyle. Voice America Health and Wellness.
You are tuned in to Holy Hormones, Honey, with Leslie Carol Botha. To call into our program today, please dial 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. You may also send an email to leslie@holyhormones.com. Now, back to the show.
And welcome back, everyone. We've got a lot to talk about in this last segment. Julie and I were chatting off air, and she mentioned that this is a hard road to hoe. There's a lot of opposition to the trials that she's doing, to the works that she's doing, but the support is growing. And so we really need to thank pioneers like Julia Ruckledge and others who are really changing our perceptions on how we view some of these disorders, quote unquote, disorders that are afflicting so many, not just Americans, not just Canadians, but people all over the world. Julia, let's focus on your study. You had 80 people in the randomized clinical trial. Mm-hmm. Can you profile them for us?
So they all had to have ADHD in order to be in the study. They were all adults. The reason for that was actually because ethically, you're not allowed to study. We weren't allowed to study children until we'd done a study on adults in order to ensure that it was safe. So that's why we were taking blood work to ensure that we weren't having any effects on the liver functioning or kidney functioning. And a lot of them came in. We didn't exclude. That's the other thing about randomized controlled trials is they often make them very clean. And by that I mean that they only have the diagnosis of that you're studying, whereas we chose to open it to anybody who had ADHD, regardless of whether they had other problems. And in medication trials, we know that when they have other problems, like a mood disorder, substance use, or an anxiety disorder, that can often reduce the effect of the treatment. But I guess from my perspective, I want this to be, once the trial was finished, I wanted it to be meaningful and useful to clinicians out there. And so if you use a clean sample, it's not very representative of the population because, as I was saying before, a lot of people with ADHD come along with a lot of other challenges, like the low mood, et cetera. So we included those types of people as well in the trial. So we had about 50 to 60% of them also had another, what we call co-occurring or comorbid disorder. So that's important in terms of translation, how translatable it is, the findings, in that given that we found the effect, and we found the effect in this type of population, then it's more powerful because having those other challenges, as I said, often decreases the overall effect of the treatment.
Well, if you're doing a study with medications, Julia, I can understand that someone with co-occurring disorders and on a variety of different medications, all of that will skew the study.
In a medication trial, they will often take a clean sample, so they won't. It won't be necessarily comparable to the sample that we used. So, but the other thing is that we had to have people who were medication free, and that was also a challenge, just to find people who were unmedicated.
Right.
Obviously, we weren't in a position to take people off of medications, and we never encouraged people to come off of medications. So we had to find a group of people who were unmedicated And so that took a lot more time in terms of recruitment because so many people who approached us and wanted to be in the study were already on a medication.
So did they have to be off for X amount of time, like 3 months,
yeah,
6 months?
They had to be off for 4 weeks at a minimum in order to be in our trial.
Okay. And did you say these were all men in your trial?
Men and women. And we had, I'm trying to remember, it was about, I've got it in front of me. It was about just under half, probably. Probably about 60% men.
So, and the age ranges were from about, what, 20s, adult?
16 up to, I think, our oldest person was in his 70s. So, very wide range of age. And demographically, they were from low, we had people from across the demographics in terms of low socioeconomic status up to people within a high socioeconomic status. Ethnicity was mixed, mostly what we call New Zealanders of European descent. That was about 80% of the sample. That's fairly representative of the Christchurch population. In terms of education level, we had about a third of them who had not finished high school.
And then other people who were holding or had maintained or tried to maintain careers or jobs.
Yes. There were people who we had people who were unemployed, people on disability, and we also had people who were high flyers. So we had a mix of people.
So were there some people profile part of the trial that did more or did better than others, performed better than others on this micronutrient protocol?
Yeah. We published a second paper on that very topic because that's a topic in itself, and in the RCT you're just looking at whether or not there's a group difference, and that itself is complicated. So we've now published another one that's on what we call it predictors, trying to figure out if you can identify at the beginning who's going to do better on the treatment versus someone else. And the interesting thing that we found from that analysis is that there wasn't anything really that came through about the person, like their demographics or their history or their co-occurring disorders. All of those things didn't affect whether or not they were going to benefit from the treatment. So we can't say that this only applies to people of a low socioeconomic status or that it only applies to people who had ADHD but no other disorder, because those things didn't influence it. It's surprisingly to us that there was nothing that came through there. But having said that, that's a really good thing, because it means that if you have someone come along and who's got a whole bunch of co-occurring disorders and they're abusing substances, that this is still there's still the potential that they could benefit from this treatment. It doesn't mean that, oh, well, actually that person's not going to, they're not going to do well, so there's no point in trying. This, our analysis suggests that actually that those are, it is viable, and then there's a possibility that any type of individual presenting could benefit from this.
Well, you know what if I could just interject here, because let me explain what I'm seeing from all of this. I mean, because generally you would think a low socioeconomic status that they do not have the financial resources to buy those high quality foods.
Yes.
The organic foods, to go to Whole Health Foods. I don't know what you have down there, but we've got chains of them up here. So what you're saying is it's really no difference across the socioeconomic spectrum, meaning that we are all deficient in certain nutrients no matter what.
I'm not sure we can quite conclude that, because remember that all the people we looked at had ADHD, and so that's not necessarily representative of the whole population.
Well, true, yes.
Yeah, so within this context, it seemed that the food is, it's very, very hard to look at the dietary patterns and see whether or not that's influencing it, and I won't even begin to try to do that, because we looked at that in a very, very rudimentary way, in that people to determine that people weren't changing their diet during the trial, and that was why they were getting better. And we were able to establish that, no, that wasn't happening, that people weren't changing what they were eating during the trial. And we say that's an important thing to kind of control for, because otherwise people will say, well, actually the people went through the trial and they just ate better and that was why they did so well. We can confidently say that's not the case. People were not changing what they were eating.
That's very important.
Having said that, if people were to change their diet, we don't know if that would influence it. That's another study in itself, is to do a diet manipulation study or looking at dietary patterns. The issue of deficiency, and that's a tricky one as well. Some people wonder whether or not people with mental illness are more vulnerable to the deficiencies that are occurring in food, and so therefore they express mental illness to a greater extent than someone who is perhaps less vulnerable. So that's a possibility. We measured some nutrients in the blood and to see whether or not people were deficient. And again, that was reported in that separate study. And there were not a massive number of people who were deficient. So, which to me says that those serum, and yet they got better, and so they benefited from the treatment. So serum markers are not necessarily going to be helpful to decide who should take this treatment and who shouldn't.
You had
serum markers may not necessarily help you understand what a metabolically active brain needs. So it's quite peripheral to that.
I'm sorry I interrupted there, because I just grasped what you were saying. So that serum markers, meaning if we go and get a blood analysis, blood analysis, that might not be the determining factor.
So for example, zinc is something that's been identified, that lots of people think is associated with ADHD, that children with ADHD have low zinc. And so we found that there was a fairly small percentage of our population had low zinc, and yet they still benefited from the treatment. So that's just saying that these serum markers, these blood markers of nutrient levels, may not necessarily be that informative at this point in time to tell us who's going to benefit, who's not. Vitamin D was a slightly different one, in that people who had low vitamin D, their mood was definitely affected, in that when they were taking the supplement, they then their mood was far more likely to benefit if they'd come into the trial with low vitamin D.
Yeah, and I'll be doing another show with Sue Rex Ryan, who's the author of Defend Your Life with Vitamin D in a couple of weeks, March 6th, I believe.
Yeah.
Just as an aside there. You had, if I remember right, Julie, you had a 47.6% outcome on this trial. Can you explain that?
So that's the number of people who we believed had really benefited so much to very much improved over the 8-week period. So that was in comparison to about 20% in the placebo. So that's about half the sample taking the micronutrients had a substantial improvement. You have to remember that that's within a very short period of time. Our observation is that it takes a long time for the micronutrients, or it can take a long time for the micronutrients to have an effect. So if you were to have people exposed for a much longer period of time, that number may increase. But the problem with that is that you can't really do that within a placebo. It's very challenging to keep people in a randomized controlled trial for a really long period of time, particularly because if you're not doing very well, they tend to drop out, and that causes great problems to your study if people are dropping out. So you make it a length of time that's long enough for you to detect that it's not a placebo effect, but it may not actually be long enough for optimal effect of the treatment.
Okay. Julia Ruckledge, thank you very much for being on Holy Hormones, honey. That was fabulous information. We'll have to have you back. She said, not in the summer in New Zealand, because then it would be 4 o'clock her time, too early. Thank you, Julia. And we'll keep following your work. And that's going to do it for another show here on Holy Hormones, Honey. Join me on February 27th. The topic's going to be A Mad Woman's Story of Psychosis to Happily Ever After. Please share this message of true hope with everyone you know. In the meantime, take care and blessings.
Thanks for tuning in to Holy Hormones, Honey. Please join host Leslie Carol Botha again next Thursday at 12 noon Eastern Time, 9 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. Have a great and healthy week.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program brought to you on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericahealth.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.